What a great show today. You don't want to miss a second. We have Larry Elder to talk about all the things that are going on in California. Tim Kennedy is our guest, the sheepdog mentality. We also have Bill O'Reilly to talk about the events of the week. And we begin with the Texas abortion law. Wait until you hear about the heroes. All on today's podcast.
Don't forget to go to blazetv.com/Glenn to get your subscription to Blaze TV. Promo code is Glenn. You'll save $10. Please subscribe to this podcast and Stu Does America as well. Right on this podcast platform, you can rate and review. 5 stars is the appropriate number of stars. And to celebrate the incredible accomplishments of our president, Joe Biden, don't forget he's been named the Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan's Person of the Year, Taliban Joe Biden, available at talibanjoemerch.com.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
The Democrats are concerned that there might be some funny business going on with the voting machines. They're not sure this vote will be secure. We'll bring you up to speed on that. And it's a good thing. You know, these progressives, California leads the way. They lead the way. Okay. And it is, I am so happy to see that California finally is, you know, since what, 1849, finally has a legitimate candidate that is black, but he's racist. I mean, I don't know if you saw this. I don't remember the news source. I think it was Babylon something. Apparently, they have a photo of Larry Elder in his high school yearbook with blackface. How could you possibly have that guy in California?
Actually, I think that's the way you get to be a governor in this country right now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's actually going to be a real positive for him.
You might be. You might be. Or you could just go to Canada. Mm-hmm. Let me give you a couple of pieces of news here. Let's stay on the abortion thing for just a minute. Cut 4. This is Psaki answering an abortion question. Listen to this.
Following up on the Texas law, why does the president support abortion when his own Catholic faith teaches abortion is morally wrong?
Well, he believes that it's a woman's right, it's a woman's body, and it's her choice.
Why does the president, who does he believe then should look out for the unborn child?
He believes that it's up to a woman to make those decisions and up to a woman to make those decisions with her doctor. I know you've never faced those choices, nor have you ever been pregnant. But for women out there who have faced those choices, this is an incredibly difficult thing.
Oh,
the president believes their right
thing.
To be respected. Go ahead. I think we got to move on.
Wow. I am so offended. I am so offended. How dare them? Mm. Men can be pregnant, too. And a man who has been pregnant several times, Lieutenant Colonel Scott Mann, I'm hearing now he's not been pregnant several times. Well, I don't know what's wrong with him. Former Green Beret commander and leader of Task Force Pineapple. Welcome to the program, Scott. How are you?
Let me get my breath for a second. I'm ready.
Oh, you have breathing exercises. Are you pregnant now?
Is that breathing. Yeah, how are you?
I'm very good. Hey, I have Tim Kennedy on today on my podcast, and I was talking to him yesterday, and you know, the suicide rate is already crazy of Afghani war fighters on our side. Yeah. And I said to him, you know, I just was talking to a guy who's on my staff. He's my chief researcher. He was a Marine. He was one of the first people in. He was off the coast of Australia when the towers fell. And so he's one of the first people in. And yesterday I'm talking to him and all of a sudden he just gets choked up and starts to cry. And we weren't talking about things that were that. He just said, you know, so I just question what I've done. I just question everything. Can we talk about that, Scott? How can we help?
I mean, you know, the I'm seeing the same thing with our volunteers who, you know, the on the Pineapple Express, who these retired special operators combat infantrymen, Marines who volunteered to help their brothers and sisters who they had served with, they got re-triggered again. I mean, I talked with a Vietnam veteran yesterday, Glenn, who's basically had to watch Saigon fall twice, you know. And, you know, the level of moral injury that our veteran population and their families and our Gold Stars have endured post 9/11 alone, you know, 800,000 who fought in Iraq, it is really rough. And when you see, you know, I think people are astounded to see the way we come together around honoring this promise. But I think it's because people finally are hungry for something that gives meaning to what we did. And that's the reason I sent you that video, the man in the arena, is because the only person that gets to assign meaning to a lived experience in combat is the person who lived it. And that's important to remember.
So for people who don't know, can you just quickly tell the story of, you know, Pineapple Rescues, what you guys have done?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it just started with one friend of mine named Nizam, who I'd served with in Afghanistan. He was an Afghan commando. He went to our American Green Beret course. He had applied for his SIV visa. It didn't get approved. And he was in duress, hiding in his uncle's apartment in Kabul. And it was clear he was going to be executed as Kabul was overrun by the Taliban. So a couple of us, Green Berets, ABC reporter James Meek, and Congressman Waltz's staffer, we got together on the phone and we just started coordinating. And we found a plan to basically help get people to help move him through the city, get him close to the gate. We called people inside the gate and started coordinating that way. They recognized that this guy was a commando. He needed to be pulled in, and they gave him the word pineapple as a code word. And he used it, got pulled through, and that is how we got to be known as Task Force Pineapple. And then we just brought other SEALs, other Green Berets into our midst. Task Force Duncourt did the same thing, Team America. And it was just a group of volunteers who were working to save their brothers and sisters and honor a promise. And it was all about just, you know, fulfilling on what we said we would do, the way they showed up for us.
So when you said earlier, I want you to go into moral injury. You're the first person that I have heard say this, and it has really stuck with me. But I'd like you to explore that and explain the moral injury that is happening to right now to almost everybody who has fought at all in Afghanistan.
Yeah, I mean, a moral injury, you know, is one of the worst injuries that we can incur, whether it's in combat or not, and because it's the kind of injury that scars the soul, you know, and there's no deeper wound than that when the soul is scarred, when you have to take action that runs counter to your moral compass. And, you know, combat throws that at us all the time, and politicians make it particularly challenging because of the policies and bureaucratic approaches that they lay on top of, you know, what should be, you know, the humanity of honoring a promise. And again, this is every administration I served under for the whole Afghan war. We faced moral injury after moral injury as we executed our orders. And now, though, I think this is the ultimate. I mean, any veteran will look at this. I think any citizen will look at this and go, oh, no. This is what my parents taught me when I was in kindergarten.
Oh, yeah.
You don't lead your... And to violate that, I believe, if we violate this, if we don't stand together as a nation, we are running off a cliff towards, you know, an abyss of moral injuries that will haunt us the rest of our days, both as a collective and as individuals.
Scott, I don't know if you've ever heard me say this before. The audience is probably so sick of hearing this story, but it is so, I understand it fully right now. When I went over to Auschwitz, I talked to one of the righteous among the nations. She was 16 years old. She started saving Jews with her mom and dad because of her. When I asked her about 10 years ago, what do we do to water that seed that's in all of us? She said to me, "You misunderstand. The righteous didn't suddenly become righteous. They just refused to go over the cliff with everyone else." This is what you're talking about. Now, these people, all of us, know what our parents taught us, what we don't leave people behind. Our word is our bond, all of these things. And if we accept this, we will go over the cliff with the rest of humanity. It is so important for people to stand and do not move from that principle.
Once you do, it's very hard to come back. And this is not about Republican or Democrat. mask or no mask. This is about a level of humanity and doing what our gut and our solar plexus tells us to do. Oh. Our body knows what to do, and we have to trust that.
Okay, so Scott, you are, I'm just putting myself now into somebody who's currently serving, and you had to stand there, and your gut said, this is wrong, but you did the right thing by not violating a legal order from the president. We have to have that discipline in our military. So what do they do to get past this? And how can we help?
I think a lot, this is my belief, is I think a lot of it has to do with storytelling. I think that, you know, societies for thousands of years have used storytelling to assimilate. I mean, that's actually the nonprofit that I run and what I've focused my 8 years on since retirement before all this happened, and I can't wait to get back to, is helping our warriors tell the story. I mean, they need the scars. I call it the generosity of scars. You know, the scars they've endured are healing, and in the form of stories can help guide the rest of us to better days and show us what leadership looks like. Our veterans are doing that now. And I think as a society, the more that we can empower our veterans to tell us their stories and to listen to their wisdom, to the lived experience that they've been through. I mean, it's, you know, the scars that we have are the greatest assets we have in this world. And veterans right now are pushing them down because they think that there's something wrong with them, or they think that there's something, you know, immoral about them. And the fact of the matter is they're the finest humans on the planet. Yeah. And as a society, we need to give them the permission and the stage and the microphone, however that shakes out, to tell those stories and share them with us and come home. You know, we never even let our Vietnam veterans come home. And this is, I believe, narrative and story exchange is one of the most powerful things we can do as a society.
I will tell you, one of my more powerful memories is probably 20 years ago now. It was right after 9/11. We were sending people into war, and I did something called, what was that, Stu? America? I don't remember. But we went across the nation, and the whole rally for America. And it was, yeah, the whole point was, we cannot dishonor. If we are going to choose to go to war, we have to be there for our soldiers in the good times and bad, and we must not repeat the mistakes of Vietnam. And we did a big, yeah, event, and I remember a Vietnam veteran coming up to me, and he shook my hand, and it was the first time that anybody had shook my hand, and you know how you do the challenge coins, but his was his medal from Vietnam. And he shook my hand, and in tears, he said, this is the first time I have felt welcomed home since Vietnam.
Yeah, yeah. You know, that's true, Glenn. And, you know, I actually, for the storytelling piece, I wrote a play about the war called Last Out. This was before any of this happened through our nonprofit. And to complete my midlife crisis, I started acting with a group of other combat veterans, and we took it on the road. And we went to all these different cities, and we would, and the whole idea was to do storytelling, like, you know, old school storytelling from the stage, so that people in the audience could actually experience and feel, you know, what my character, Master Sergeant Danny Patton, a Green Beret, and his family went through in this long war and his relationship with the Afghans. Now it's very haunting to see it. But I can't tell you that the one Green Beret Sergeant Major's sister, she stood up and she said in our talk back, you know, thank you for showing me in 90 minutes what my baby brother's been trying to tell me for 5 years. Mm. And, you know, it really is in the realm of narrative that we can heal. And we're going to have to find a way to do that. We're going to have to find a way to do that as a nation. We're going to have to find a way to do that for our veterans. You know, and I'm really looking to, like, I hope that our political leaders, I hope that our thought leaders will look at what our combat veterans are doing right now. You know, while everybody else has gotten really furious, they've gotten to work and they're showing us, they're literally showing us in real time what leadership looks like. I mean, they're modeling it for us in spite of all that they've been through. Some of them are re-triggering themselves in order to honor this promise. And I just hope that we take note of it and we steer away from that cliff as a collective, because it could be our last chance. And I know that's dramatic, but I'm not even kidding.
I agree with you. Lieutenant Colonel Scott Mann, retired former Green Beret commander, leader of Task Force Pineapple. You can follow him at Rooftop Leader on Twitter and his website, OperationRecovery.org. Scott, thank you so much for being on the program.
You're listening to the Best of the Glenn Beck Program.
we have Hurricane Ida to cover. And Bill, your take on Ida and how things are going.
Well, I got whacked by it driving out to Eastern Long Island on, what was it, Wednesday night.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the intensity of these storms is obviously something that people should pay attention to. And I'm not buying into the global warming is making the storms worse. That's the corporate media.
Mm-hmm.
They're telling you that. I mean, if you look at the history, the worst hurricane in U.S. history was 1900 in Galveston, Texas.
Correct.
10,000 people died. 10,000. And there aren't cars then. I mean, maybe it was the Cal gas that did it. I don't know. But I think that people should pay attention to the elements. And, well, you know, the people that say, oh, I'm going to stay on Forche Island in Louisiana and I'm not going to leave. Well, you're going to die then.
You know, here's the problem. This is, I believe, a government-created problem. People didn't live in these dangerous places on the coast because the insurance, private insurance, was too expensive. And so, and in some places, they would not insure things. And people raised holy hell, and the progressives said the government should be the insurance policy for all of these places. Yeah. No, you right. should. I mean, New Orleans has had so much money poured into that city, and it's never spent cleanly, and usually not even spent on things that would help that city not go underwater all the time. There's only so much you can do.
They did a good job with the levees after Katrina. I think you have to give the government credit for that. And the Army Corps is a good outfit. I mean, they can come in. But you're absolutely right when you say if you're going to buy a house on the sand on the Gulf Coast, it's just when, not if, you're going to get it. And then if you're looking around for somebody to bail you out, that's not really right.
Yeah. I mean, I've been to Galveston. Galveston is a really nice place. You know, I really like it. It has some really cool things to it. But, you know, it says hurricane zone everywhere. And the last place I would buy a place if I wasn't going to be bailed out by the federal government, the last place I would buy a place would be Galveston because I know it's going to get hit by a hurricane and then I'm going to have to rebuild it. And it's beautiful and it's got some old great buildings. But guys, it's not the place to invest your money over and over and over again.
Well, the last place I would buy is Malibu. And I don't want my money to go to rebuild Barbara Streisand's house. She lives in the woods in Malibu. The woods are going to burn down, Barbara. Okay? And if they burn down, then I don't want to have to pay to rebuild your house.
Right.
Because the woods are going to burn down.
It's insane. It's insane.
Right.
Every year it's the same story. And it is the federal government's problem. They are the ones who are causing much of this harm because of all of the bailouts and all of the insurance. Go ahead.
Yeah, we can't bail the people out. There should be zones that are designated high risk. And then if you want to buy there, you're on your own.
Yes.
Some Friday, not today, but remind me to tell you how I saved Dick Van Dyke in Malibu in a fire.
Oh, I got to hear that story. Not today, but I do have to hear that story. Bill.
To remind you.
Okay, Bill, let's go to Texas. And what the president says is an all-out assault on law and order, the heartbeat bill.
And the president will receive communion in a Roman Catholic church on Sunday. And I'll just remind everybody. How that is happening is just beyond me.
I mean, you are a Catholic and you go to church every Sunday. So, you know.
All I know is that the Roman Catholic Church, one of the most grievous sins, so bad that you're excommunicated, is abortion. Yet every time I turn around, that Catholic guy, Joe Biden, is saying, I want to make abortion easier. I want to have abortion up to birth. You know, if you panic 3 hours before you're supposed to deliver, you can kill the baby. This is Joe Biden. So I don't know. I mean, look, I'm a sinner. I'm not judging anybody. I'm just a little confused about how the Roman Catholic Church is dealing with Joe Biden. I'm a little confused. Now, let's get to the Texas law. So the law is really an interesting situation because it doesn't provide criminal penalties
right.
for any physician who aborts a fetus after a heartbeat is detected. They did that on purpose because if they had, then the Supreme Court would have ruled that law unconstitutional. All right? Everybody should understand that's where you start. So Texas is not saying we're putting doctors in jail if they abort after fetal heartbeat is detected. What they are saying is that anyone can sue the doctor in civil court if the physician does that. So rule of law and all this other business isn't really what the situation is all about. What this is about is states' rights. That's what the five Supreme Court justices ruled, that Texas has a right to make laws that protect the unborn. But it doesn't have a right to do it in a criminal way. It's a civil action.
Right. It okay. gives you standing to sue the doctor that does it. It's an interesting theory. I don't know what kind of problems this, I don't think it's going to stand, but I wonder what kind of problems if it did, that could open the door for. But I, you know, it's a valiant effort. The thing to me is, first of all, Jen Psaki, do we have the audio of Jen Psaki just beating down a reporter that asked that Catholic question of Joe Biden? Listen to this.
Following up on the Texas law, why does the president support abortion when his own Catholic faith teaches abortion is morally wrong?
He believes that it's a woman's right, it's a woman's body, and it's her choice.
Why does the president, who does he believe then should look out for the unborn child?
He believes that it's up to a woman to make those decisions and up to a woman to make those decisions with her doctor. I know you've never faced those choices, nor have you ever been pregnant, but for women out there who have faced those choices, this is an incredibly difficult thing. The president believes their rights should be respected. Go ahead. I think we got to move on.
I find this amazing because they were just arguing that men could be pregnant. And now, of course, no, this is a woman's right. This is an attack on a woman. What about all the men that could get pregnant as well? And that's a serious question.
Yeah, I'm confused about the birthing person.
Yeah.
Situation. I kind of don't really understand that. I called my old high school biology teacher. How come you didn't present this?
Right.
I you know, a birthing person? We didn't have that. Anyway, this is the PC woke culture that Jen Psaki embraces in a very enthusiastic way. So don't you dare ask a question about abortion if you are not a female or a birthing person. But do you have to get a license to be a birthing person? How does that? I don't know.
I
checked my birth certificate. It said male.
But if something
slash birthing person,
if something is alive and coming out of me as a man, I would call maybe at least police officers or an army special somebody. Just you should have more people in the room than just a doctor because I have no idea what's coming out of me. Let me change.
Wait, back.
Yeah.
But, I saw that in Alien 3.
I know.
Weaver.
I know.
And then some alien came right out of the guy.
I know. That's why I say you need to have military
there.
Is
that a birthing person?
Let me change the subject to Joe Biden. He is now giving a press conference as we speak on the Delta variants and how the Delta variants are a drag on our economy and the only reason why we haven't added more jobs. The jobs report for August has just come out and it is abysmal. They were expecting almost three quarters of a million, got about a quarter of a million. He is again coming out and saying, I've added more jobs in my first quarter of presidency than any other president. That's like the White Star line saying, you know what? Yeah, but we also, the Carpathia showed up and we also saved more people. Your ship went down. And also, of course he did. The entire economy was turned off.
His baseline is April 2020 at the height of the shutdown in the pandemic. That's his baseline for adding jobs. So, I mean, it would be like, hey, I had the highest batting average in Major League history because I was hitting 0-0-0, but I got one hit in my first three, and I raised my batting average 333 points.
Right.
It's the same con.
Yeah.
But the American people are so distracted, so exhausted. I do believe people are exhausted.
I do, too.
No matter what you say, and of course, the media, the corrupt media, oh, yeah, that's right, Joe Biden, he's the big. And the final thing is, most of the people who would take the jobs aren't still not looking because they're still on the gravy train.
Well, he is just saying, I'm listening to you and I'm watching the text of his remarks. And he's just saying one of the problems is, you know, employers are not willing to pay enough money. And, you know, they got to cough up more money.
I pay more than them. I pay you not to work and they won't top it. They won't top it. Oh, I know. I mean, but this is what socialism is. But do you, Beck, let me ask you a serious question here, okay? Do you think that right now, as Joe Biden addresses the nation, that he knows what he's talking about?
No, but I don't know if he's ever known what he was talking about. It's just worse now because you've added senility to it. So, Bill O'Reilly from BillO'Reilly.com, Killing the Mob is his latest book that is out. If you haven't subscribed to BillO'Reilly.com, I urge you to do that. Don't say, I miss him on TV. You can see the no spin zone. You see it. You see it. All you have to do is join him
at
BillO'Reilly.com. I don't know, but that was a good interruption. That helped.
You were very, very kind to promote BillO'Reilly.com, but yeah. I have to add one more thing I don't think you understand. I am better looking now than I was on the Fox News channel.
Wow.
And that is just more incentive.
And you are calling Joe Biden senile and out of touch. Bill, thank you so much. God bless you. Thank you very much. This is the best of the Glenn Beck program. Welcome to the program, Larry. How are you?
Glenn, I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Holy cow, I have never seen anything quite like it. Here is the most progressive state who claims that they want equality for all and they care about the plight of the black man, blah, 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 and they want to break all the barriers. But my gosh, not if you're Larry Elder.
That's right. Just in the last week, I think it's Glenn, I've been called, let's see, a gun-toting, non-tax-paying, women-hating, black face of the white supremacy. That's exactly what the L.A. Times headline was.
Wait. That's the L.A. Times?
L.A. Times headline verbatim, Glenn. I kid you not.
Oh, my gosh. So
Larry Elder is the black face of white supremacy. Subheadline, you've been warned. End of quote.
Mm. Oh, my gosh.
And God forbid somebody like Larry Elder should support choice in education, which black and brown parents want, according to polls. God forbid Larry Elder should oppose state-mandated vaccines and mask wearing for state workers, which the polls suggest that state workers oppose. God forbid Larry Elder should do something about the outrageous cost of living. We just hit $800,000 average price of a home here in California, Glenn. That is anywhere from 150% above the national average to 250% above the national average, depending upon which study you read. God forbid Larry Elder should want to do something about the outrageous rise in homelessness. Again, depending upon who you read, we have anywhere from 25% of the nation's homeless to 50% of the nation's homeless.
Jeez.
And God forbid Larry Elder should want to do something about the fact that for the very first time in our state's 170-year history, Glenn, people are leaving, businesses are leaving in droves. So that makes me, quote, the black face of white supremacy, end of quote.
Larry, I'm getting mixed signals. I know that Soros has stepped up and put another $500,000 behind Gavin Newsom.
Right.
He did that this week, which that seems like a panic move to me. And then today I read, not a chance, not a chance. The polls are crazy. It's runaway for Gavin Newsom.
Yeah, George Soros has put a great deal of money into the coffers of my opponent. Speaking of George Soros, he's responsible for that soft-on-crime DA that we have here called George Gascon, who's also facing a recall election. A bunch of victims of crimes, and I had a press conference yesterday talking about all these people that should not have been let out by George Gascon, who got his first job as chief of police from a guy named Gavin Newsom, when Gavin Newsom was the mayor of San Francisco, and then supported his candidacy when this guy ran for DA of Los Angeles. But they're scared to death, Glenn. They've raised a minimum of $50 million, probably closer to $75 million. From the usual suspects, the teachers union, the public sector unions, Hollywood, and big tech. I'm probably going to be outspent by a factor of almost 10 to 1. And they're panicking over another big factor that few people are talking about, Glenn. When I become governor, not if, but when I become governor, notice how you haven't seen Dianne Feinstein in weeks, if not months.
I love this.
I'm told she's in worse shape than Joe Biden. God forbid something should happen to Dianne Feinstein. Elder will replace her with a Republican senator, and that upsets the entire balance, 50-50, that we have right now in the Senate in Washington. And they are scared to death.
I have to tell you, Larry, I have thought about that. We've talked about it on the air here. I really believe if you are elected, when you are elected governor of California, this is a game changer and could be one of the major points of saving the nation. Sincerely.
I believe that. And what's going to happen here, registered Democrats outnumber registered Republicans a little bit more than 2 to 1. I'm going to change the image of the Republican Party. I'm common sense. You know me, Glenn.
I do.
I'm low tax, low regulation, going to do something about the homeless problem, going to give parents choice in education so they don't send their kid to a school where only 75% of black kids can read at state levels of proficiency, and those levels are low. The math scores are even worse. 80% of the kids educated in our government schools are black and brown. And once they see some sort of improvement, the image of the Republican Party in California and all over the country is going to improve. And that's what they're deathly afraid of. I'm from the inner city. I went to a public high school. I wasn't born on third base and thought I hit a triple like my opponent. And I'm going to change the entire image of the Republican Party in California, and dare I say, the entire image of the Republican Party in the nation. And a whole bunch of people who are now Democrats are going to rethink their allegiance to that party.
So, Larry, have the voting public in California, do they have that short of a memory that this isn't a runaway for you when it comes to Gavin Newsom? I mean, his low point had to be going out, you know, and what was it, having $1,000 a plate dinner or whatever,
right,
without a mask.
Right.
Have they forgotten that he thinks he's king?
Well, that's my job to remind them of it. And that's why I need more money, because if you cut on the TV out here in California, every other ad is Gavin Newsom. He's facing a recall election by the Republican takeover. And I need to remind people, you're quite right. He sat up there at the French Laundry restaurant incurring a wine tab, just the wine tab, $12,000. Sitting up there with the very people who passed the mandates that they were violating by not wearing masks and by not engaging in social distancing. Mm. Had his own kids enjoying in-person private education, mandating that you wear a mask outdoors while his own kids at summer camp were outdoors not wearing masks. It's the arrogance that angered people, and it's my job to remind them of all that.
Larry, I just want to, before we continue on, give me your address of where people can join your campaign and help finance your campaign.
They can go to electelder.com, electelder.com. And by the way, we have a voter integrity project, a bunch of lawyers all ready to go to file lawsuits in a timely fashion. If you see or hear anything that you think is irregular, any kind of shenanigans, go to my website, electelder.com. There's also a volunteer button. So I really do need the help. And by the way, we have a recall committee, Glenn, which you can put an unlimited amount of money. I know you have a bunch of millionaires and billionaires who listen to your show. Let them know that they can send and spend an unlimited amount of money to help me make this somewhat of a fair fight.
By the way, the Dominion software is being used. Concerning?
Very concerning. Not only that, Glenn, you can print your own ballot now. You can contact the Secretary of State and literally print your own ballot. What could possibly go wrong?
Jeez. So, how are you, what are you putting into place to try to make sure that this is fair at all?
Well, again, we have a bunch of lawyers all ready to go to file lawsuits. We've already filed some actions because of some irregularities that we've seen, but they are going to cheat. And we know what happened in the 2020 election. They are going to cheat. But I think so many people are angry, they're going to be outvoted even though they're going to be cheating. Nearly one quarter of the people that signed the petition to recall this man voted for him just 2 years earlier. 65% of Hispanics voted for him, and they're the largest group here in California. Now the majority of Hispanics want him out. They're angry about the quality of education. They're not putting the best teachers, the best principals, the best administrators into the inner city. They're putting them in the west side. They're putting them in the valley. And so Hispanics and blacks know that they are being disproportionately negatively impacted by the teachers union, the largest and most powerful union here in California, that desperately opposes school choice because the teachers were not automatic union members and they don't get those automatic dues. Plus, the crime has gone up. And the people who are disproportionately victimized by the crime are black and brown people that the left prides itself on caring about. And the cost of living. When people leave making between $50K and $100K here in California, the number one reason they cycle in is they cannot afford the price of a home. So all of those things are disproportionately negatively impacting Hispanics. Again, the largest group here in California. And they've now turned against Gavin Newsom. So, again, it's my job to remind them of all of that. And I need the money. So go to electelder.com. On the replacement side, Glenn, I have a huge lead over my rivals. I'm not worried about that part. But 50% plus one voter has the first vote to recall Gavin Newsom.
Right.
And then the second part is, who do you want to replace him? On the replacement side, I'm far ahead of my rivals. I'm not worried about that. I want 50% plus one Californian to vote to recall this man for all the reasons Glenn and I have been talking about. The rise in the cost of living, the rise in homelessness, the outrageous way this man ignored science, shut down schools, shut down businesses, while shutting down churches, while keeping liquor stores and marijuana dispensaries open as essential businesses. It's outrageous. A third of all small businesses are now gone forever here in California.
Larry, we know the Republicans couldn't have done this by themselves. You needed independents and Democrats to make this recall even a possibility.
Right.
And now the governor is trying to make it seem like to that the moderate, to the conservative leaning Democrat, that you're scary. You're not California
right.
values. You're going to shut down all of their rights and all these things. What do you say to a moderate voter who is worried you're going to be way too conservative and out of step with California?
Well, the main driver of that is what I've said about mask mandates and vaccine mandates. I am not anti-vax, contrary to what an ad that Gavin Newsom put out. I've been vaccinated. I'm in a high-risk category because of my age, because of another underlying comorbidity. But I don't believe you should be mandating these kinds of things. And to the extent that we have mandates for state workers that we do right now, a state worker who's not been vaccinated has to be tested once a week, and he or she has to wear a face mask at work. When I become governor, that mandate will be repealed. But as for cities and local districts and local schools and the private sector, they're going to make their own decision. So calm down. The elder is not anti-vax. I think that vaccines are fine for people in certain categories, but other people have made a very different decision. Isn't that what freedom is all about? Why is that scary? And I've been asked about Roe v. Wade. as if that has anything to do with why I'm running for governor. But if and when Roe v. Wade is overturned, and I believe that it ought to be overturned, I'm pro-life. Nothing's going to happen in a pro-choice state like California, for crying out loud. Two-thirds of the lawmakers in Sacramento are Democrats. They're all pro-choice. There's nothing that suggests if and when Roe v. Wade is reverted back to the states where it should be, that all of a sudden the Democrats are suddenly going to become pro-life. So calm down. I've also been attacked for saying that there shouldn't be a minimum wage. Do I think people should work for free? Do I think they will work for free? Drive around the city. See all these help wanted signs. It's ridiculous. I'm running on crime. I'm running on homelessness. I'm running on the outrageous cost of living. I'm running on the fact that this guy shut the state down while ignoring science, while not abiding by the very rules and mandates he put down the throats of everybody else. I'm running on the poor forest management. I'm running on the fact that we're having energy brownouts. That's what I'm running on.
Larry, when is the vote?
Well, people can start voting now.
Oh,
the actual vote is September the 14th. But about 20% or so of people, based upon our surveys, have already voted. 80% of people are still making up their minds. So go to electelder.com and throw something in the tip jar. And for those of you out here in California, vote now. Vote now. And if you don't trust the mail, you can track your ballot, and you can also drop it off at a voting center if you don't believe that the mail is reliable. But vote now. Vote right now.
Thank you so much, Larry. Let us know anything we can do to help. I really, truly believe you getting control of California is a life-saving game changer.
Well, Glenn, thank you for that. You didn't say anything about how raspy my voice sounds. One woman said I sound like Shaggy, the rapper. And she said it was sexy. I didn't get any love from you on my voice, Glenn.
Well, you're sexy always, right. No matter what you sound like. Thanks, Larry. I appreciate it.
I'll take that.
God bless.